There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
Good day. Before we start our new series, I would like to read a brief statement on behalf of Max Mike Movies, LLC. Mike is a dope. He ate a bar of soap. Bubbles here, bubbles there, bubbles in his underwear. Thank you. I will not be taking any questions, but as a follow-up, I would like to add, nanny nanny, boo boo. I feel this is an appropriately mature note to start our series, 'Cause I Wanna, and You're Gonna Like It, on. This time, we're selecting movies simply based on the criteria that we haven't discussed them yet, but we really wanna. And we don't want to wait no more for some dumb specific series. We want to watch them now. Now, 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 now. So there. And we're kicking things off with 1999's Dogma, chosen by me, 'cause I wanna. And because it was my favorite Kevin Smith movie. So let's get to it. I am your semi-divine host, Max Snoochie-Boochies Levine. And over there is Mike, I wish he were silent, Luce. Give us a meaningful caesura, Mike.
Can we call this the Criteria Collection?
Ooh, let's do that.
I don't think it's taken.
Sounds familiar.
No. I think we'd be first.
Yes,
we'd be first.
No, very original. But before we go with that, before we get too original, we've got our
poll question.
Last week, we were absolutely desperate to know, what is your favorite movie plot twist?
Don't make kissy lips when you say poll question.
I love you, Hortense! And we're going to start off this time with our correspondent from far beyond, in the land of the snowy penguin and the frozen chinchilla. Vince!
In a land before time.
In a time before time.
In a film before
Vince.
Film.
No. Vince says, when I first saw Planet of the Apes, I was blown away by the ending and still think it's great. And despite the controversy about who actually wrote it, there's a controversy? I didn't know that.
Oh.
Hang on. I am sure it had to have been Rod Serling. What? In one of his early drafts before leading the project. My God, I didn't know that at all. I got to look this up.
Me neither.
Memento was also a great surprise for me when I saw it. Yes, that entire movie is a twist.
Well, the surprise was, hey, it actually does make sense.
Yeah, but that's very cool. Thank you, Vince.
Yes.
Well-known author Tony Kellner says, the end of Planet of the Apes.
Oh, there you go.
Or Sixth Sense.
Oh.
Okay, both classics. Kelly Cooper chimes in with, yeah, I'm going to agree with Tony on The Sixth Sense. What a twist! The Prestige is a close second, but I didn't enjoy it in the same way.
Well,
things weren't laid out so neatly and then pulled together. It was more shocking than inevitable.
Yeah,
I go with that. Tyler Stewart simply says, Knives Out.
Oh.
Interesting. I don't usually think of mystery movies as having a big twist.
Yeah.
They all have that.
The only time there's a twist is if I actually guessed who did it, because never happens. So it's like, oh, it was them. What a twist.
Does not happen, yep. Keith Wright, a member of the second greatest podcast known to the universe.
Wait, what podcast is that?
Why, that would be Q Footsteps.
Oh, I should look that up. I hear it's really, really good.
You should. You can go to qfootsteps.com and listen to episodes.
Wow.
And you should. Now!
They're watching our show.
Oh, after our show.
Yeah.
Keith Wright says, definitely agree with The Sixth Sense. Mm. That was one of Ramalama Ding Dong's best movies.
Yeah.
That's how he said it. That was him. I really love the twist at the end of The Usual Suspects. Charles Forsyth tells us, a good plot twist is one where you have to watch the movie over again to see all the clues you missed. The best one in that context is The Sixth Sense. I think we have a front runner here.
Yeah, maybe.
It's kind of cliched now, and Shyamalan's highly variable work, that's a polite way to put it, has kind of tainted its legacy, but it's still a masterwork of plot twists.
Mm.
Also good, Memento, and Fight Club. Oh, yeah. Memento is a movie entirely made up of plot twists. Thank you, Charles. The reveal at the end of Fight Club is also Wait, I have to rewatch this reveal. Psycho belongs on the list as well. Oh, yeah. Psycho's a good one.
Yeah.
Derek Steele.
Oh, here it comes.
Secret agent.
No.
Says, Vanilla Sky is an all-time favorite that falls into this character. I've never seen that.
Oh, really?
I'm not sure. Nope, never seen it.
Oh, I liked it. It's actually Tom Cruise, which is surprising.
Okay, it must be good if you liked a Tom Cruise movie.
Yeah. He wears a mask through most of it. That helps.
I guess. I'm not sure if it's the plot twist that I love or just the alternate reality of the lucid dream that exists, quote unquote. Mm. Also, bonus points for my favorite part, which you hopefully utilize at work, tech support!
Ah.
I hope you get that. I don't.
Well, he used to work with me at that store that I work at that I can't name because I don't know why I can't name it, but I can't.
I don't either. And, of course, Dave says, this is a tough one. Ever since the 2020 election, I've been attracted to tragedies.
Oh.
I can't imagine why.
Attracted to? Yeah. Or inundated by?
You know, watching Juliet drink the poison or Oedipus Rex asking just one too many questions about how his father was killed. The accident that we know is coming happens and is unavoidable due to human frailty. On a lighter note, I always like when Wile E. Coyote buys something from Acme and it does not work in some clever way.
That's not a plot twist.
No, that's a feature. Just not learning. A real plot twist often makes a movie unwatchable a second time.
Oh, I disagree.
Oh, interesting. I loved Angel Heart.
Oh, yeah. Yikes.
That's a good, but boy, that's a hard one to watch. Yeah. Back when I saw it, and I think it stood up to multiple views. Wouldn't want to spoil a plot twist.
No, it's kind of a big one. Yeah. Although, it's not that hidden. I mean,
No.
Dr. Acula.
Acula. I will also say, while we're on the subject, that I love Orson Welles. Whether it is Rosebud or the plot twist in F for Fate,
he's
the ultimate plot twist director. Nobody does it better. I think that is a solid argument.
F for
right
Fake.
There.
That, oh, man, that one just
I don't
had,
think I've ever seen that.
Oh, it's a really interesting film. It has my name written all over it because it's about an art forger. And the best part isn't just the movie. Well, I should say about half the movie's about an art forger named Elmer Dehori. He was somebody who did a lot of stuff in the
60s. Was real?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And he's in the film. Like, they have interviews with him and stuff, and he talks about how he basically made fake paintings and lots of money. The best part is the guy who did a biography about him was, I think, John Irving, who liked the idea of faking art so much that he would, with his next book, fake somebody's biography himself, that being Howard Hughes. Do you remember hearing about this book where he wrote this biography of Howard Hughes? I have all these conversations with him. Of course, Howard Hughes at that point wasn't talking to anybody until the book came out and was doing very well. And John Irving, I think his name was John Irving, was on the cover of Time magazine. And Howard Hughes called somebody that knew him, somebody in the news industry, and said, I've never heard of this guy.
Whoopsie doodle.
So,
for Japanese movies, love the way the plot trickles out in Harakiri, starring Nakadai. Nakadai rules! Yep. That is actually a very cool movie. It is a very slow-paced movie and grim, so it might be hard for modern audiences, but not as slow as an Ozu movie. Well,
Ozu.
I don't know what an Ozu movie
is. Uzo. It's a Greek liqueur.
Uzo.
It's Uzo.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That doesn't sound very slow.
It's a twist.
And maybe you're supposed to drink. Oh, you drink it with a twist.
Yeah,
okay.
Oh, sure.
Every step of the way, there is one surprise or another, each one making Nakadai look more competent than the last. It was remade, but I've never seen the remake because, let's face it, Nakadai is just too good an actor for a remake to ever be appropriate. Yes, I will completely agree with that.
Hmm.
And, of course, from legendary Tatum inventor...
I bought two this week.
Richard Tatum says, other than the one's name, the end of Don't Look Now, one of my favorite films.
I don't know that one. Do you?
I don't think I know that either.
Oh. Huh.
I know the name, but I know nothing about it.
Well, I'm some point maybe
okay,
we should
gotta look
it.
This one up. Thank you, Richard. And that's pretty much all of them except, of
is
course.
It's getting warm in here.
My, yes.
Moist.
My little iron butterfly of love.
No.
Doris, talk to me. Talk to me slow.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. Hi, Max. This is Dora Simplemeyer here to answer your poll question, which just happens to be, what is your favorite movie plot twist? I'm sure there's going to be a lot of spoilers here, so, you know, like you boys say, spoiler alert. Now, I could go with, you know, The Usual Suspects or maybe The Crying Game because those were like major plot twists. But to be honest, I mean, Usual Suspects, I went, whoa, really? But then I felt cheated. Like, yeah, I get it. But then I was like, wait, everything I heard was a lie? No, I'm not a fan of that. So I'm going to go with a couple of other ones. The first one that came to my mind was No Way Out with Kevin Costner. When you find out that he's actually the Russian agent that they've been looking for the whole time, I thought that was pretty clever. But I really think that the plot twist that beats all plot twists is Psycho. Because this whole time you think there's this other lady there, and there ain't. It's just all him. So that's a pretty awesome plot twist if you ask me. Those are my answers. I haven't heard this week's episode yet. I'm really looking forward to hearing it because I saw this movie and I have thoughts. So anyway, have a lovely week and I will look forward to hearing you next week as well. And I'll see you later, Max. Bye.
Yep, another one for Usual Suspects. Yeah. Cool. At the Crying Game. Yeah. That's one I'm not sure holds up to a second viewing.
I haven't seen it since it came out, and ever since Billy Crystal did that bit on the Oscars, where he kind of outed the film, and it's like, okay.
Yeah. Also, No Way Out with Kevin Hood. That is a good one, too.
I never saw it.
Yeah, that's actually very well done. He's in it, Sean Young. Yeah. And yes, the best one, Psycho. Yeah. Another vote for Psycho. Yeah. Yes. But what about you, Mike? What is your what's your favorite plot twist in a movie?
Honestly, I think it's Usual Suspects. If for no other reason that when my friends and I went and saw it, we came out of the film and stood around in the parking lot for 2 hours talking about the film.
Wow.
Just really, really liked it. Loved the way it was put together. Loved that I didn't see it coming. I like being duped. If it's done well, I don't like being duped if it's like, but that character died. We saw them die. Yeah, and he never got out of the cuckadoodie car.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. Yep. So, and I think that is a just really well done, clever, well acted film, even with Kevin Spacey in it. That was a film that I'd never heard of Kevin Spacey. And I was like, who's this guy? Yeah. And I went and rented some of his films. And then, of course, he became a horrible human being. Yeah. But yeah, so I'm going to go with that. And I will give a big nod to Psycho because I'm sure there were plot twists like that before that, but that was kind of big one.
I think that was unique. Yeah, that was a game changer.
But how about you? What's your favorite plot, or one of your favorite plot twisties?
I liked a lot of the ones that have been mentioned. Yeah. Sure, Usual Suspects, Psycho. But the one just in terms of pure visceral emotion, and it was because I'm sure I was so young, was Empire Strikes Back.
Oh,
with the I am your father.
Yeah. It's funny to think that of that as a plot twist now.
I know, but when I saw it and I saw it the day it came out, I skipped school to see it because I'm a bad boy. And
how bad are you?
I'm so bad. Yeah, I tear the labels off of mattresses.
I skipped school to see Jedi, so I can't say much.
Of course. But that's the only one where I was in the theater and actually heard myself go,
yeah.
That just blew me away. So these were great answers. Thank you so much. And you know what? We liked them so much, we're going to do it again. Oh, a shock.
Yeah, like we do every week. What a twist.
Exactly. That's the twist.
No, it isn't.
No, I suppose it isn't. Is it irony?
What's the question?
No. Oh, yeah. What, somewhat inspired by today's movie, what is your favorite cinematic depiction of celestial beings? You know, angels, devils, God.
Okay.
And we'll tell you how to answer that and where to send your prayers at the end of the show.
Okay.
But now, stuff! The facts. Budget for Dogma. $10 million.
I'm going to guess it mostly went to actors.
Probably, yes. Although there was some to the effects.
Because Jersey is cheap.
Well, yeah, but tearing holes in reality isn't. The global take, there's some question of this, but it's somewhere between 33 and 45 million.
Oh, so it was successful.
Not a blockbuster, but it made money.
Hey, four times its budget. That's pretty good.
Yeah. The triplets' attack on John Doe, Jersey, was filmed on the boardwalk in Ashbury Park, New Jersey.
Asbury. There's no H.
Oh, sorry. Oh, that's right. I even have it here as Asbury.
It's Bruce Springsteen land.
Asbury. All other scenes were shot in and around Pittsburgh.
Ah. Well, I think they say something about... No, they say Wisconsin. Did they say Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
Maybe they do.
Well, they go through Pennsylvania. I mean, that's...
I've been through Pennsylvania.
When Kevin Smith and Scott Mosier heard that Alan Rickman was a Chasing Amy fan, that was from 1997, they asked him to play the Metatron. He read the script and just asked two questions. Would they stay faithful to the script? And are the wings real or CGI?
Wow, at that point...
Apparently, he liked the answers.
Yeah, at that point, CG wings would probably have been a no-no, but...
Yeah. Jason Mewes, a.k.a. Jay of Jay and Silent Bob, had the entire script memorized before rehearsals. When asked why, he said it was because he didn't want to get Alan Rickman mad. And because Kevin Smith took him aside before rehearsals began and said he had to be on his best behavior and bring his A game.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that a little more.
Oh, I heard also he was like really nervous to be in any scenes with Alan Rickman.
He was terrified. Yeah. He also, this was kind of at the height of his drug use.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. Also, according to Kevin Smith, Alan Rickman held on to the maracas he conjures all day when they shot the scene. And he kept playing with them and driving the cast and crew crazy.
And what did they do? Nothing, because it's Alan Rickman.
It's Alan friggin' Rickman. Yep.
Good for him.
Now, this may come as a shock due to the bland and uninciting content of the movie, but this movie was pretty heavily protested, particularly by the Catholic League. I know. Who knew? They're so sensitive. One of the leaders of the Catholic League, William Donahue.
Donahue?
Donahue. I think it's actually Donahue or Donahue, believe it or not. He lambasted the film and publicly protested against it for months, despite never actually seeing it.
Well, that's... Wow.
His office called View Askew and requested a special screening so he could speak about it intelligently 6 months into this campaign. Kevin Smith responded, "So what has he been doing the past 6 months?"
Well... It's the intelligent conversation part. That's the hard part.
Yeah. Yeah. Rufus's reply when asked if he knew Jesus says, "Know him. N-word owes me $12. That was one of the very few lines that Chris Rock actually ad-libbed.
Okay.
At about 1 hour 9 minutes, when Rufus is asleep on the train and wakes up suddenly, he suddenly says, "Poopy trim." This is not in the script, but Kevin Smith had used it in Mallrats.
Had he?
And Rock remembered it. It's the same. The other ad-lib was when he calls Silent Bob Biggie.
Okay.
It's supposed to be Tubby.
Okay.
The Buddy Christ statue, which I would love to own, that, and this might give me a way to do it. It actually is on display, at least as of a few years ago, at the Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash, which is a comic book store in Red Bank, New Jersey, owned by Kevin Smith. You can buy replicas of the statue, and it's become one of the store's biggest selling items. Now, I have seen replicas, but they've always just been like 6 inches tall.
Wow. So
I want a full size one.
And they're not at Sharper Image? Weird. Remember them?
Now, one of the legends of this film,
ooh, legends,
is, according to Kevin Smith, that Linda Fiorentino was really hard to work with.
Oh.
Some days she wouldn't even speak to him.
Okay, that's professional.
Later, he said he wished he'd offered the role to Janine Garofalo.
I wish he did, too.
Yeah, that actually would have been amazing.
Well, I didn't dislike Linda, but I think I like Janine better.
I know I like Janine better. Once filming was up, they didn't talk to each other at all until after Smith had his heart attack in 2018. And a whole bunch of people got in touch with him who he hadn't heard from for a long time, including Fiorentino. He apologized about his earlier comments to her, and it gave him some closure there. That was nice.
Okay.
The movie's restaurant playground that we see briefly was created especially for the movie, and it's shaped like a giant meat grinder. On the train, and I didn't catch this the first time I saw this, or the fifth time, when Silent Bob grabs Bartleby, Bartleby yells, "Schuler Bob, I'll get you for this, Schuler Bob!" Ben Affleck ad-libbed the line, much to the amusement of the cast and crew, because he was trying to make it Silent Bob in German. He left it in, even though Schuler does not mean silent, it means pupil.
Okay.
Notice this, all of the angels are identically dressed, except for the color of their clothes. They're all wearing hoodies, they're all wearing a jacket over it, they're wearing a t-shirt underneath.
Yeah, but so are the Stygian triplets.
The triplets, yeah. The hoods worn around the neck of the three angels, Metatron, Bartleby, and Loki, represent their halos.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. George Carlin agreed to take the role of Cardinal Glick despite being a rabid atheist and a longtime disparager of the Catholic Church.
Maybe that's why he took it.
Been, It might have been. He was raised Catholic. But he didn't want to take off his wedding band because he'd recently lost his wife. So he wore a Band-Aid to hide it. For those of you who are into Catholic minutiae, this was actually unnecessary because the Pope gives each cardinal an Episcopal ring as a symbol of their office. Oh. The ring usually has a gem, usually amethyst, but it's possible he was given a simpler ring or received permission to wear
one. Wait, does that mean all the cardinals are married to popes?
I think that's it. I think that's what the symbolism is. That's weird. Yeah. The brides of popes.
Okay.
Yep. Kevin Smith has a credit as a puppeteer under the name Kevin P. Smith for helping out with the wings in various scenes. I see. Yes, those were practical effects.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Now, here is one of the big questions. This movie now is incredibly hard to find.
Weird.
Here is one of the reasons. Due to the religious backlash, Disney was having doubts about releasing the film, at which point Miramax's Harvey Weinstein personally bought the distribution rights, and the film was released by Lionsgate instead. By the way, making it Lionsgate's most profitable film up until 2004 with Crash. Since Weinstein owned the film, it became out of print after its release on Blu-ray in 2008 and was thus unavailable to purchase digitally for many years. Kevin Smith just got the rights back in 2024 and released it both theatrically and digitally to celebrate its 25th anniversary.
Okay.
Physical media releases of this film are incredibly hard to buy in the U.S., and they go for a ton of money on resale, on eBay, and all over the place. The film's also unavailable for streaming services. However, a full-length version of the film is available for free on YouTube with Kevin Smith's full support.
Boy, just the way it used to be free every weekend on Comedy Central.
Yes, yes, possibly many times in a row. Yeah. This is the fourth film in Kevin Smith's intricately interconnected View Askewniverse.
Uh-huh.
The others are Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, Clerks 2, Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, and Clerks 3. You're noticing a trend here.
Sure, universe, huh?
Yeah, they do. There's a lot of the characters, a lot of the same actors show up.
Oh, same actors, yeah.
Smith wrote the draft of the first draft of this film in the 90s, before Clerks. He was going to do it afterwards because if you in the credits at the end of Clerks, it says Jay and Silent Bob will return in Dogma. But he didn't like the early version of the script and decided he'd wait until he himself became a better filmmaker.
Oh, well, good for him.
Kevin Smith talks a lot in a blog about Jason Mewes' battle with drugs. Ooh. In it, he talks about how Mewes was using heroin during the filming of Dogma. With specific reference to the scene outside movies where the apostle is telling Bethany, Silent Bob, and Jay's life story, Mewes kept nodding off during takes where he wasn't in the shot, which got him yelled at by Smith later.
Ouch.
You can see him nodding off a few times.
I didn't notice it, but that's all right.
The role of God was originally written for Holly Hunter. Oh. Even though she wasn't cast, they kept the reference to the piano.
Ah. I got that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Golgothan's first line, not born, pooped into existence, is taken verbatim from Grant Morrison's Arkham Asylum, A Serious House on Serious Earth. It pertains to a really gross-looking clay face. Uh-huh. Kevin Smith originally wanted Danny Elfman to do the score for the film. Oh, darn, he wasn't available. There were 8 versions of this script, and not one of them ever had anything about God cleaning up the street at the end. Kevin Smith had what he called an epiphany at the last minute. There had been a bunch of shooting delays, and the church eventually asked Smith to clean up the street, so he did it immediately and added God cleaning it up, rather than disappoint the church. There's a ton of other stuff. That's all I think I want to bring in. Do you have anything?
I actually do. And this is something I did not know until I watched this movie this time, because I've seen it before. I think everyone, even if they hadn't watched it before, has seen it before because Comedy Central. I have a personal connection to this film.
Ooh, what's
there is an actor in this film that I know.
Gasp.
He plays the bartender, the holy bartender. That is Matt Mayer. Matt Mayer was one of the kids that used to hang around at the Million Year Picnic. And used to
no kidding.
Yeah, he used to do errands for us and stuff. He was a little skater punk, quite honestly. If it was, he was the age when he hung around the picnic, he'd have been perfect for one of the Stygian triplets. But he was this really nice kid who just hung out and read comic books and would get us stuff. And it was, he was there for a couple years.
Cool.
And I think he actually was either in the same class or near the same class as Ben Affleck and Matt Damon at Cameron Jordan's in Latin. Okay. So that's why you will tend to see Matt Mayer show up in movies that have something to do with Ben Affleck. So yeah.
Oh, all right.
So just
very
that.
Cool. But, thank you.
By all means, tell us the plot. That won't get us damned or banned or whatever, because we're just reporting about it. We're not
exactly
making a statement.
Exactly. In the beginning was the script, and the script said unto us that Saint Bethany wouldst be spoke unto by the archangel Severus Snape, and he did say unto her, get thee to New Jersey with two stoners, one of whom shall be the director, and the other of whom shall be a drug-addled ninny. And these two did unto Saint Bethany say, snooch to the nooch. And they did travel far together. And two angels of the Lord, Goodwill Hunting and Batman, did decide to travel likewise to Jersey as part of a theological cleft stick that was unto the plot essential. And lo, they did lay waste to the bus of Greyhound and the boardroom of Mubi the Golden Calf. And they knew not that they were manipulated by the demonic voice of Syndrome from The Incredibles. And St. Bethany did encounter Chris Rock, the 13th Apostle, and his five-minute routine on the nature of Jesus and the Bible. And lo, they did encounter the muse Serendipity, and unto her did I say, Hamana, Hamana, Hamana. And through many travails did they wend their way until they did stand before the angels in New Jersey, and there was much smiting and wrath and so forth, and did they, the angels, rout. And God did grin and do a handstand and refuse to sing You Oughta Know, and there was much rejoicing.
That was a jagged little pill.
I thought so.
Oh, there we go. We're done.
The film.
So, have you seen this before?
Oh, I think so. I'm sure I'd seen it at least once, but the problem is that, as I said, it was on Comedy Central, so you'd be vacuuming to it or cleaning the silver or whatever, and bits and pieces would just be there. So I probably only seen it once before this. How about you?
Okay, I saw it in the theater when it came out, and I saw it a few times also on Comedy Central or other places.
Oh.
Yeah. But let's talk cast.
Oh, yeah.
Holy crap. Yeah. Now, Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, they're both
they're
in
so
this.
So charming together. What a lovely
they're
couple.
So cute. They're so cute. I wish they'd gotten married. They're just adorable.
You can tell these guys have known each other for a long time.
They knew each other forever. Yeah.
And they're both fine.
And they have such great chemistry. Yeah,
they are. They do. They actually spout this stuff pretty well. If Matt Damon isn't Catholic, it would kind of surprise me. He just smells Catholic. I don't know. You know what I mean? There's that kind of Boston Irish Catholic face, and he kind of has one.
It's written all over
his
face.
And if he isn't,
absolutely.
It doesn't matter. But
yeah,
the little arguments they have about, what's a good word for it? Dogma, are actually pretty well delivered, and it feels very personal. So they're fine.
Yeah. Yep. Linda Fiorentino.
Yeah.
Troublesome or not, I think she does a good job. I mean, she's the audience surrogate. She's the what the hell is going on here person.
We have one major problem with her being the person who she is. Spoiler, she is the last scion. If you don't know what that is, go ahead and watch
Da Vinci Code.
There we go.
Or read Holy Blood, Holy Grail.
She's not Jewish.
No,
and she should not, be.
She could be descended through one of the males.
Well, then she wouldn't actually be the last sign, would she?
Yeah.
So here's the problem with this whole thing. Jews aren't really mentioned in this film.
No, this is very Catholic. However, there is one aspect of Judaica that does show up, and that is the Metatron.
Right.
The Metatron is not mentioned in the Old Testament or the New Testament. He is mentioned in the Talmud. He's mentioned in the Kabbalah.
Isn't he also one of the Avengers villains from the old comic books back in the 60s?
No. Nope. You're thinking of
Megatron.
You're thinking of Kirby's Fourth World, the New Gods.
Okay.
Dark Side, there is a character in there called Metatron.
What a surprise. Jack Kirby being Jewish.
Yeah, he sits in a chair and everything.
Yeah, but there's stuff they talk about, and it's like, this is often forgotten conveniently by people today, too. And that is that Jesus was, how to put this, Jewish. Jewish. And
yes, I'm sure, he had a mighty schnoz and probably, I mean, come on, there's the old joke. Of course he was Jewish. He lived at home till he was 30. He went into his father's business. His mother thought he was God, and he thought his mother was a virgin.
Okay. What was it? I think Casca, the Eternal Warrior, said, yeah, I remember him, short kid with bad skin.
And a big nose. Yeah.
So I do have that issue where she's like, oh, she's a nice Catholic girl. It's like, she shouldn't be. I understand why you did it. But the reason I bring it up is that, well, we'll come back to this, but there's a problem. But the next person that's in IMDb, I did not recognize, and he says nothing.
Yes. Nope, no lines, but our old friend from Harold and Maude, Bud Cort. Yeah. Plays John Doe Jersey, the embodiment of God in this movie.
Well, the initial embodiment of God.
Sort of, yeah. Because
the better one comes up later, but yeah. Then we have the three kids who play the triplet. Skip.
They're terrific. Yep. I thought, yeah, but they were very menacing.
Yes, but they are also silhouettes.
Yes, they are. I don't think they went on to do a lot. And then there's, one of my great heroes is George Carlin. Yeah. I love George Carlin, and he is perfect as Cardinal Blake.
If anything, he does actually feel a little Jewish, though, the way he delivers lines. But that's
something. Well, you're getting a heavy New. He has a heavy New York accent that's often sort of conflated with the Jewish accent. I love him.
I mean, I just like George Carlin. We're before that. I'm not funny. I'm just angry, George Carlin, which is good.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. This is exactly.
Skip.
There's a. There's one I want to mention.
Oh, no, there's other people. Just there's a whole bunch we can skip.
Oh, yeah. No. There's one that we're skipping. The nun in the opening sequence that Loki basically talks out of her faith.
Oh, God, it isn't.
That is Betty Aberlin.
Oh, my God, it is.
Lady Aberlin from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. That is who that is.
I did not see that coming. There's a plot twist.
Yep. Ain't that a twist?
I just saw her name, and it's like, Aberlin, oh, God, it's from Mr. Rogers. It can't be, but it is.
Yep.
Yeah. We have skip. Janine Garofalo, not nearly enough to do.
Wasted.
Utterly wasted.
Yeah, kind of wasted in this. Jason Lee as Azrael.
Kind of perfect.
He nails it.
Well, he's
absolutely this self-obsessed, narcissistic demon. It's perfect.
Yeah, kind of. Is he the one who played Syndrome?
Yes, he is.
Yeah,
he's the voice of Syndrome.
I can see that a lot.
Yep.
Because he was in a couple, wasn't he in Chasing Amy and... Was he in Mallrats?
He was a big Kevin Smith favorite. Yeah. He is absolutely in Chasing Amy
Chasing
and Mallrats. And he's also in Jay and Bob, Silent Bob Strike Back. He's in a ton of them.
That's what I thought.
He was part of Kevin Smith's coterie of actors.
And speaking of which, we've got Jay. Although we do have a very quick special guest star appearance by Randall from Clerks, who's there for 5 seconds.
Yes, he shows up. So does the other guy, Dante. Yeah. He's in like one shot.
I hate to say it, but Randall's my favorite character from that film. He's such an ass, but...
He is such an ass hat. Yes. We've got Selma Hayek as the muse, Serendipity.
Yeah, we'll get back. There's no muses in the Bible. Just going to say it right here. There are no muses in the Bible. No. That's a Greek thing.
No, there are none.
We're going to come back to why that's
a
thing.
Well, no angels are named Loki or Bartleby either. Loki's a Norse god and Bartleby is a scrivener.
Okay. And we can't leave out Jay and Silent Bob themselves. I mean, Jay is Jay, and he's very, very good at being Jay.
He is terrific at being Jay. Not a lot of range, but that's what he can do.
I have a problem with Kevin Smith.
What?
He talks twice.
Yes.
And one of them is to quote an Indy Jones movie.
He talks at least once in every movie that he's Silent Bob. He gets like one line. I don't know if he says anything in Clerks, but in Mallrats, he says, you know, excitement, adventure, a Jedi craves, not these things. He usually has only one line. Okay. Chasing Amy, he gets a monologue.
Okay.
I always admired that about Kevin Smith. Like, okay, you're going to put yourself in the movie, but not give yourself any dialogue. The longer he went on, the more Jay ends up talking.
Oh. There's one part where he speaks in this film, and Jay does waggle his finger at him. Like, you're not supposed to talk.
But I like them. They are so annoying yet likable. I mean, Jay is such an idiot, but there's a weird kind of innocence about him.
Well, there's also this whole thing about Jay being gay. And it seems to be true, and then he says, not all the time, and then they just sort of...
Well, he refers to...
They don't deal with it, like, it just goes away.
They never do. He's always coming off as heterosexual in most of the movies, but there's a lot of gay subtext. I mean, he refers to Silent Bob as his hetero life mate.
Well, but it's... Metatron says specifically that when he... in pleasures
Rufus.
He pleasures himself, he thinks about men. And he doesn't deny
it. Silent Bob stares at him and he goes, not all the time.
But it's like, okay, we're not going to deal with this. All right, fine. Mm-hmm. So, I think everybody was, if most of the people, let's face it, were friends of Kevin Smith in one way or another.
But we haven't talked about the two big ones. Alan Rickman.
Yeah. I love Alan Rickman. I miss Alan Rickman.
Alan Rickman, if he was going to be the voice of God, I would be, yeah, that tracks. I have no trouble with that. It'd have to be him or Morgan Freeman. One of those two would be the voice of God.
I also like the fact that they let him be funny. Poor Alan Rickman is so often just the bad guy or evil or whatever because he's good at it, but they let him be funny in this, and it's so nice.
He is hilarious. No wonder you're single.
And what is it? Who's the other one?
Alanis Morissette.
Yes, she delivers her lines perfectly.
She does. She says,
whoop. Yeah.
Meep. No, that's the thing. She does a great performance and doesn't say a word.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking at the end, I have no problem with her as an aspect of God. It works perfectly.
Yeah, I don't think she comes off as being all-knowing or anything, but it's a delight to have somebody so, like, if you were going to pick anybody, you wouldn't have thought of her. Like, she's not an actor, she's a singer. And I don't think she even acts any other time except this. So,
you know the odd part? She was supposed to play Bethany.
Really?
Yeah, but her tour schedule got in the way, so she had to do the smaller part.
See, I would rather have seen Jeanine Garofalo. Jeanine Garofalo is just criminally underused for anything.
She is. So, she is. Yeah. I don't know.
But yeah, that's the cast, and dear gods, we didn't have a lot of time to talk about this movie.
Yeah.
The film starts off with a thing that says, basically, we're not passing judgment, therefore you shouldn't either. I'm sure Pauline Kael did not read that part or just simply ignored it, because guess what we're going
to
do?
Yeah. It reminded me a little of the opening to Holy Grail, especially the apology to the fans of the platypus.
Yeah, which I know that was cute. It wouldn't surprise me if that was what that was. Like, it was Kevin Smith talking about Monty Python.
Speaking of the opening, I love the Buddy Christ. The first time I saw that, I couldn't hear the dialogue for like 2 minutes because I was laughing too hard.
It is. I think the problem with me is that I've seen it before at this point.
Sure.
Many times, maybe. So I will say that is going to cloud my view of the film, which isn't fair, because when they made the film, they weren't expecting it to literally be everywhere for a number of years. Yeah. But I do love the idea of trying to market the Catholic Church so openly. Not that it isn't done, but the fact that they're actually doing, like, it's nearly ad campaigns, right? And it's...
Well, that great line where he's talking about, you know, hook them while they're young.
Yeah.
And Rufus says, you mean like the tobacco industry? And he just looks, goes, Christ, if only we had their numbers.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
A lot of blasphemy in this film, too, including by the... A
lot of it. Yeah, you notice how much the angels take the Lord's name in vain?
Well, they're angry. I can understand that. Yeah. So, one of my questions was, how much trouble did Smith get in for this movie? And apparently quite a lot. So,
quite a bit. A lot of people went after him. And he actually joined one of the protests, pretending to be just a random fanatic.
Wow.
And they're like, what do you think of Kevin Smith? He actually got someone to interview him. And they're like, you know, you look like Kevin Smith. He goes, yeah, I get that a lot. I've never seen any of his movies, but I've heard Clerks is good.
Yeah, there was another movie that came out in the 80s. Was it Scorsese? I think it was Scorsese's.
Oh, it was either Pat. I think that was Last Temptation.
It was Last Temptation. I remember there was a lot of people that were protesting that, too.
Yep, protesting.
Mm-hmm. By the way, if you have not seen it or heard of it, there's actually a really good 5-part documentary about Martin Scorsese. I think it's on Apple TV Plus, and he talks about that, and he's a lifelong Catholic, so, I mean.
Is it called just Scorsese?
I think so, yeah, Scorsese.
Okay.
So, the skate punks, or the Stygian triplets here, did they remind you of anything? I'll give you a hint, it's a comic book reference.
I assume, I don't know, not really.
So, there was a comic that I really liked that first came out in the 80s, I believe, and it was called Mage. And then finally, they got around to doing Mage 2, and in that comic, which came out a year before this movie came out, they had these little skate punk demons called the Spriggan Flints.
Oh, that's right.
And they were, to be fair, it's little punk skinny kids wearing the hats and stuff and being and attacking people on their skateboards, except there's Fly. I'll give them that. And they don't have hockey sticks. But I was like, I kind of wonder, because Kevin Smith is a comics fan, so.
True. Might have gotten the idea. I like the fact that whenever they show up, you hear flies buzzing.
Yeah, because there's somebody who's quote-unquote Lord of the Flies. Who's
Beelzebul is Lord of the Flies.
Okay, yep. Beelzebub. So,
Beelzebub.
Yeah.
Hey, bub.
So, the script and the concept of this, I don't know if this reminded you of this either, but I'm like, do they know a rules lawyer RPGer? Because that's what this sounds like.
Yeah,
Yeah, it really does. It sounds like they sat down with a gamer, and particularly one of the annoying ones. Okay, how do the rules work?
I was going to say, we're going to go ahead and look really deeply into those, and we're going to, period, every comma, we're going to sit there and analyze that, which does lead us to one of the problems I have with the film.
What is that?
Well, when you basically decide, I'm going to make a whole film about poking at people's rules, when you break your own rules or break the rules of the thing you're depicting, that can be a problem, such as the fact that The Last Sign is not Jewish, the fact that you have muses which are not in the Bible, the fact that there aren't angels named Loki and Bartleby, or stuff like that. It's like, are you doing this or are you not doing this? Because if you're here to basically take this, I mean, that's the name of the film, right? If you're basically here to say, okay, we're going to read these rules exactly the way they're written and interpret them exactly the way they're written, and you don't actually stick to the source material, it kind of, to me, shines a spotlight on how clever you think you are.
Maybe, but I also like the fact that one of the primary themes of this movie is the Catholics got it wrong.
Well,
they forgot about the 13th apostle.
Well, they one made of the that big up. Things,
that's the thing. He isn't mentioned, but his thing is he existed, and they didn't write about him because he was black. Well, and the fact that in this, Jesus was black, right, which, by the way, there's a fair amount of evidence for. He came from North Africa, for God's sake.
Well, he was Jewish.
He could have had he could have had black skin. Well, there are black Jews. They're the Ethiopians.
Sammy Davis Jr.?
He was a convert.
Still. Well, let's face it. He's not white. There's no question of him not being white.
He does not look like one of the Bee Gees like he does in most of the iconography.
Didn't, but, you know.
There's no way.
I get why he was doing this, but the whole 13th Apostle, and that's just made up. Like, that's not even a real thing. It's not like we're talking about the Gnosis books, right, which were left out, and like, oh, well, these aren't the apostles. Well, we don't count them because we decided we didn't count them.
There are a number of supplementary texts or later discovery.
I think the actual term is "and the rest."
Yeah, and where people say, "Oh yeah, there was a 13th apostle, and it was me."
Well,
and then there was the 13th apostle, Steve.
He was my favorite.
The idea of extra apostles is not new. It's been going on for 800 years.
No, but there was never one called Rufus, or even expected to be.
Probably
Rufus.
Not.
So, when you're basically pointing that finger, my feeling is that you really need to stick to what's actually there. Because when you start playing with the rules, then you're accusing these people of playing with the rules. To me, it lessens the impact of what you're doing. And I think that's, for me, that did strike this time watching the film.
Yeah, that didn't bother me as much because they're talking about how the rules are wrong and the dogma is wrong and they got all of these things wrong.
Right, but when they got the rules they're talking about wrong, that's... And the depiction's wrong. Never mind terms. Again, muse. There is no muse in the Bible. So that's a Greek thing. So that did bother me.
What did you think of the laying waste to the Mubi boardroom?
Well, okay. The Mubi cow thing, I think, was a little too on the nose.
It's very much hitting you over the head. It's like the Mubi, and they even call it Mubi the golden calf. Get it? Get it? The thing the Israelites worshipped? Get it? Graven image? Bam, bam. Well, it's like, okay, stop. Stop hitting
me. Wait, did you just bring the Flintstones into this?
Bam, 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 bam.
I thought the golden calf was too much. Like, no, I don't think that would ever have been a thing. And if they wanted to make a case for it being Ronald McDonald, I might go there because they kind of all, I mean, it's the
clearly
same idea.
The Antichrist.
Well, I thought that was Scott Baio, but that's all right.
Yes.
I think that they could easily have made a case for something that was similar to Ronald McDonald that wasn't so on the nose. But your question was...
I like that whole scene. I think it's just so powerful. The whole thing with the voodoo doll carved out of an onion.
I like the fact that it didn't
so
do anything.
Silly. Yes, but it's so menacing when he's holding his hand over it.
Yeah, it's Chekhov's voodoo doll.
Yeah.
At least he does destroy it. So I was a little annoyed because all the bad stuff... for the white guys in the office, a lot of it tended to be gay-oriented, and I wasn't real happy about that. That didn't seem necessary, because all the gay stuff was with kid. It's like, oh, he's your own son. Oh, you went to Thailand to have sex with an 11-year-old boy. You know, it's all... Why couldn't there have been women in there who also did evil things that weren't gay-related? There's one woman, and apparently she's innocent, and she works for a corporation. No. Nope.
Yeah, but that's the idea that most corporations are run by older white guys.
Yeah, it was one of those equal opportunity things that I thought could easily have been. Also, the film is, except for Chris Rock, very, very white. So, and I would have liked to.
And Selma Hayek.
And Selma Hayek, who is awesome, although she didn't get nearly enough to do. Her little speeches toward the end, though, in the bar were very cool. I did like that.
Those were very cool. I do like Asriel talking about, I was an artist. I wasn't, Muse has no place in battle. And her response is, Elvis was an artist, but he still served his country in time of war. That's why he's the king and you're just a schmuck.
Yeah, I'd be amazed if they actually let Elvis fight, though. That's a different.
They did not. Yeah. They mostly used him in like training stuff, but a lot of stars.
He's still, I think he actually joined up on his own. He didn't get drafted.
He did. He volunteered. Yeah. He volunteered.
So, yeah, I mean, it's nice to see. I think that's literally just Kevin Smith taking a big punch at corporate America, which is fine. I have literally no issue with that. Strangely, there is a scene that I kind of think we didn't need, even though you might be amazed.
Which one?
I loved the name. Absolutely loved the name. But I honestly don't know that we needed the excremental.
The Golgotham. Yeah, honestly, that is a scene I tend not to watch just because it's gross.
It's gross, but it's literally nothing happens.
This one plot point, we get to see that actually Silent Bob is capable of doing stuff.
Okay.
They're not just there for comic relief. He's the one who defeats the excremental.
Defeats. He sprays it. I mean, okay.
Yeah, he sprays it with, like, deodorant and it falls over.
Yeah, which he just happens to have. The problem I have
He explains why. Yeah. It's because Jay's farts are so bad.
Yeah, and he does do one later on and he just sprays it again. It's not a particularly convincing suit. That doesn't help. I mean, it's obvious what it is.
No, it's not a great effect.
And I just like it. It doesn't add anything really to the film. And quite honestly, what we would like to see is Jay and Silent Bob actually, I don't know, prophetizing something? Because they're supposed to be prophets and they're kind of just guys.
They do once or twice. Jay is the one who keeps coming up with ideas.
Yeah, but they all involve having sex with Linda Fiorentino.
No, he's the one who says we should get Cardinal Glick to close the church.
Didn't work.
And he's the one who reminds her about John Doe Jersey. And that's how she figures out that that's where God is trapped in the body of this comatose man.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't have known that because he not only says, oh, yeah, he's in that hospital over there.
Yeah, but he's not saying it from a position of, hey, this might be important. It's literally something he happened to remember.
I actually kind of like that, too, because a lot of the idea of the prophet isn't just that they're wise, but they're getting messages from beyond that they don't understand. A lot of prophets historically have been gibbering maniacs.
I think breakfast is something that Jay doesn't understand. So. All he wants is to have sex. And that's the other weird thing is that he's just fixated on having sex with Bethany, even though it's been proven that he thinks about guys. So whatever. I think she's more likely a prophet than they are. They're just two guys. Honestly, is fine.
She's the last scion, so yeah.
Yeah. Although, speaking of Bethany, I do have a question.
Yeah.
Why does she have to die?
Because,
what kills her? Death?
A god zap?
Like, she pulls all the plugs on the stabilized, I guess, John Doe jersey.
Well, he's comatose.
And then that's the idea, is that if he dies, he goes back to heaven and then reboots.
Yes, pretty much. He goes back to the save game spot.
Yeah, so she pulls the cord out, and the little beeper machine, the most expensive machine in the hospital, aren't you lucky, turns off. He dies, and then she just starts bleeding from her abdomen.
Well, you see a bolt of light hit her from when he dies.
So
I don't know why that happened, and why Bob wasn't hit.
Yeah,
because I think he's in the room.
Did he go with her? I thought she was just there alone. She's just there alone.
No, he brings her back. He's the one who carries her body back. And she says, come on, and brings him with her to the hospital.
Yeah, I didn't see any reason for her to die. It made no sense to me at all.
Well, I think, again, that's the parallel of her being the last scion. That is what Jesus people are supposed to do. They die and are reborn. And that's what happens.
Like some evangelical Gabor sister?
Yes, exactly. Excuse me for getting it right the first time. But yes.
Yeah.
That didn't bother me. I think it's just it's part of the whole sacrifice.
She didn't do anything that was in any way risky. It didn't make any sense to me. It's like, oh, you have to be a martyr, so we're going to kill you. And it's like, why does she have to be a martyr?
Well, in effect, she was making a leap of faith. She's saying, okay, I choose to believe that that's where God is. even though I have absolutely no real evidence, I have no proof, but I believe this to be true.
Which is fine.
And she sacrifices herself for her faith.
But she's not sacrificing herself. She pulls the plug. Like, she's not doing anything that she thinks is dangerous. She's trying
true.
To do something.
She doesn't expect to
no,
die.
No, it didn't make any sense to me. It's just Alanis Morissette can bring her back. Okay. Do have a question. This is going to be a harder one to answer. Why doesn't Metatron just blink everyone to New Jersey?
I don't know. Why didn't they just ride the Eagles to Mordor?
Right. Because literally, he does it later.
Yeah.
And it's like, was this road trip really necessary? Like,
again, this is theoretical because they don't address it. But because he says when she is freaking out because she's found out she's the last Scion and she gets an idea of what that means. She says, why didn't you just tell me? And he says, would you have believed me? You weren't ready. You had to come to this gradually. And I think this is the journey of discovery. It's the hero's journey where she finds out who she is, what she's capable of. I had no problem with that.
I did, because the blinking part literally says to me, you could have blinked them and still had your scene. And it's a good scene. I actually really like when the Metatron is like, oh yeah, I had to tell him, this poor 12-year-old kid who knew just wanted to go off and play with his friends, I had to tell him who he was, because if his father told him who he was, one word would have killed him. So sure, I get to do the dirty work. And it's like the kid was scared. He was upset with that. Why do you think there's nothing for the next 18 years? Because it took him that long to get over it. Luckily, it doesn't take Bethany that long. But the trip literally just feels unnecessary at that point. I kind of wish that he had never done that. Like, that was never a power. Like, we had just got on the train, we tossed Bartleby and Loki off, they decided we're going to risk it and fly or whatever, but we don't actually blink. It just didn't make any sense.
I get that. That didn't bother me. I like that it's a journey of its discovery.
And the Eagles couldn't fly them because the Eagles don't leave the mountains. That's why you had to get there first. Anyway.
Except they show up in Mordor.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why couldn't they just pick them up?
Why couldn't they go to
Mordor? Has mountains.
Why don't they go to the mountains where old Thoronador and Gwaihir were and say, hey, can we have a lift?
Because if they had seen the Eagles before him, they would have been shot. You know very well. It looks like a bat signal, and that's why.
I see. Yes.
No, they were
flawless
trying.
Logic.
To be fair, if we're going to go there, they needed to be quiet and unseen. Those Eagles were neither quiet nor unseen.
Now, it's also true that the Nazgul would probably have shot them down.
See?
Anyway.
There, I solved that. So
well done.
We are running out of the time, Ethan. What more do you want to get to before we get to the final part?
I actually really like the sequence where Bartleby breaks down in the arms of God. I think that's actually very touching.
And I think Affleck does a good job with it.
I do. I also think he does a good job with when he has the breakdown and is screaming about, you know, when he finally just snaps.
Yeah.
And is just like, you know, no, this is just wrong. This is evil. And I love how Loki is just like, I think someone needs a nap.
Yeah, doesn't get it. He gets a shiv. That's what he gets.
No, that's what he gets. That
armor,
was sad, too.
Armor wasn't very well.
Not too useful, no.
No.
But other than that, yeah, I think I'm good. You?
Sure.
The finish.
So, Max.
What?
I happen to know that this is kind of a favorite movie of yours.
It is. I love this movie.
When was the last time you saw it? Like, actually sat and watched it?
Yesterday. No.
Besides that.
fired. Oh, boy.
I've actually fired you in a while. Hey, first firing of 2026. Max is fired.
Hooray. Consistency. I think it must have been, it was years ago at one of the movie marathons.
Okay.
I know we showed it.
Okay.
So it's got to be 10, 20 years.
Okay. So that time, I'm sure you we're still in love with it. But now,
I still love it.
Yeah.
I still think it's great. It still makes me laugh. I do see some of the, wait a minute, that doesn't work. Or why couldn't he just do this? Or, that's odd.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you're dealing with God in general, it's like, how does he have limitations?
Right.
Oh, if he's stuck in a comatose body, he can't get out.
He's
God!
Yeah.
Or she's God! She can just say, I'm out.
Well, never mind the fact that it's like this whole I get to be a real person for a day thing. Not in the Bible, just so you know. I mean, it's not...
But I do like the idea. He wants to mingle with the people, and I like that he's a skee ball fanatic.
Well, it's like Meet Joe Black / Death Takes a Holiday, right? Same idea.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Which I remember liking. But
I like a lot of the background things, the little things like in the Cardinal's office. did you notice there is a cereal box behind him called Hosties?
No.
I thought that was great.
Are they little hoops, or little halos? And...
I couldn't tell. Or like when in the airport scene after Loki talks to the nun and they're on the moving walkway having the discussion about the plenary indulgence, which is going to get them back into heaven. If you look in the back, you can see her lurching out of a Hooters, carrying a huge thing of beer that the waiter is chasing after her to get back, and she's randomly grabbing people.
Yeah, okay.
She's just flailing around. I love that touch.
I totally missed that. Totally missed that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, would you recommend it?
I would absolutely recommend it on a number of levels we'll get to. What about you?
I think it's amusing. I don't think it's laugh out loud, guffaw, 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 funny. And I do think it's clever. But I think there's some major flaws, which I brought up. And that is, if you're going to be very pedantic about the rules of something, then you need to be very strict about those rules and not adding things that you think are cool or whatever to elevate your point. Because to me, that's basically says, well, you're not taking this as seriously as you're pretending to. That being said, skewering an institution such as this, one that purports to be morally on a high ground, better than you, better than the average person, telling you what to do, whether it be a religious institution, a corporation, what have you, I'm all for that. Because there's not enough of that.
Yeah.
I think the performances are good. It's not the most diverse cast I've ever seen. There's two people in there, but I talked about the fact that things like The Last Sign should be Jewish, whatever. But, you know, we've got Chris Rock, who's actually pretty restrained for Chris Rock, but still Chris Rock. We have George Carlin being George Carlin and probably enjoying the hell out of spouting stuff out while wearing a cardinal suit. And, you know, Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, one of Hollywood's loveliest couple. are fun. So yeah, if you somehow haven't seen this, I'm not even sure that's physically possible.
I think it's actually was part of the federal highway package back in 2002.
Yeah, or part of the big
deal. Required to see it. yep.
You helped pay for this. I honestly think that you should watch it. Just watch it with a grain of salt and question it as much as it's trying to question that which it's skewering, because I think that's necessary. I also would probably argue Kevin Smith's best film?
I think so. It may not be his most moving. Chasing Amy is more emotionally powerful, and I'm sure I could think there are probably others that are really good, although I think we can talk about Kevin Smith as a director at some point.
Yeah, I think...
But this is my favorite. This is still my favorite Kevin Smith film.
I think it's a bit too long. I think it's about 20 minutes too long. Again, things like the Golgothans scene.
Never bothered me. I thought the pacing in this is terrific.
It did bother me. Not bother me, but it's like it drags in a couple of places. And it's like, and also there's scenes like, why is he able to throw Bartleby and Loki off the train? Like literally.
I had to say, I wondered about that. It's like, when does he get super strength? I mean, these guys are almost invincible and he just bums rushes them both off a train.
Yeah, and they don't even struggle really. They're like, hey, don't do that. No, don't throw me. And they're so it felt like it could have been tighter. But if you haven't seen it, I do recommend it. So yeah. But you know what else?
You know what I recommend?
It's gonna be the same thing. Because my transitions are so terrible.
But it's our poll question. Yeah. We really want to know, what is your favorite cinematic depiction of celestial beings? Angels, devils, God itself.
Now celestial means any mythology?
Yeah, why not? Any divine, semi-divine, hemi-demi, semi-divine, whatever you want.
Okay.
We'll take it. It doesn't just have to be Jeebus stuff.
Yeah.
But you can answer this by emailing us directly at us@maxmikemovies.com. You can also go to our website, which is coincidentally maxmikemovies.com, and leave a comment.
Done.
See what I did there?
Yes, I've seen it many times.
You can also mention, you know, did you agree with us? Did you disagree with us? Do you have any suggestions for movies or series? We will occasionally listen. Not well, and we'll probably point and laugh at you, but we will occasionally listen.
No, we'll read it on the air.
You can also find us on mediocre socials like
Facebook and Blue Sky and Mastodon.
In any podcast app that you can possibly imagine, as many podcast apps as there are stars in the heavens.
Ooh.
And of course, you can call our celestial hotline with your theological questions and your crises of faith and leave a message at 617-398-3900. 617-398-7266. That number, again, 617-398-7266. No operators are standing by.
Yeah, but, you know, I haven't heard from real Julia Roberts lately. I hope she's okay.
Yeah, I know. Well, she's probably busy.
Yeah, you know, making all those movies. America's Sweetheart.
Lolim. Yep, yep.
The fact that she's even called us once.
Yes, is almost unbelievable.
It is.
Almost. But we are just getting started with this series because we wanna. So, Mike, what do you want to watch next week?
Well, I want to watch this movie. It's just I don't know how to pronounce the title. Maybe you can help me out. I think it's called Aie.
Aie.
That's how it's spelled.
I thought it was, isn't it like I?
I don't know. It's spelled A-I, so I don't know how you... A-I the extraterrestrial, I think is what it's called.
Oh, that no, that would be A-I the alternate terrestrial. No.
No, A-I.
AI.
Interesting. AI. Kai. That's a deeper I really wish I didn't know. Gertrude. AI is a very interesting film, at least from the behind the scenes side of things, because it was supposed to be a Stanley Kubrick film. But Stanley Kubrick wasn't doing well. I don't know if that had anything to do with Eyes Wide Shut. See our first ever episode, period, on Eyes Wide Shut. But he handed off the script to, and this is a film he'd been wanting to make for many years, but he handed off the script to his buddy, Steven Spielberg. Because when you think, you think Stanley Kubrick.
When I think the dark, heart twisted world view of the world of Stanley Kubrick, I go right to Spielberg.
Well, especially because of all the kids that Stanley Kubrick tends to have in his films. There's always kids.
And he loves, all his children's movies.
Lots of family stuff in his films. So I haven't seen this in a long time, and I actually do want to rewatch it to see what we think, and hopefully you will rewatch it and join us next week for AI, the artificial intelligence, which,
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.
So childish and so funny. But then again, so are we.
Yes, aren't we? Yes.